Let's go.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Don Cherry's Grapevine Podcast, voted biggest and best podcast in 2020 by Apple Podcast. And Dad,
I like that.
Yes, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Spread.ca, Spreads.ca. They're a First Nations casino and sports book tailored to Canadians. And
somebody won a lot of money. We got to talk about it, Tim.
Yeah, I got to find out. Somebody signed up and used our promo grapes, and you know, you get some benefits for doing that. But I was talking to the people, and somebody won some big dough betting on a parlay. So he bet like four or five games and won. So I'm going to find out more information to see. And
I think they'd be happy. You know, I know it's not happy losing money, but
yeah, so we'll find out what's going on. But the playoffs are coming up, so everybody thinks they know what's going to go on with the playoffs. So if you think you know,
playoffs are tough.
Maybe they used your tip, Dad, of betting on the team against the team that just got off a road trip.
I'm sure they used someone.
There's some logic.
Well, we'd lose a sponsor.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's right.
So that's spreads.ca, and again, thanks for all their help. So, Dad, you know, we had a little bit of a blast from the past this week. A friend of ours, John Price, the son of one of your best friends, Mel and Bev Price, sent you a photo of your, I don't know if you call it an autograph or a signature, on a house from Kingston behind some
wallpaper
from 1952.
Yeah.
So what were you doing?
I was with Mr. Cornwall. And we had the easiest job. Well, I didn't have an easy job, but the jobs I had before were tough. I remember I worked at the Anglin's Construction, and we over in Berryfield. I don't know how I got. Oh, I know Stan Stewart. Stan Stewart was the guy that owned an old car that used to drive over and used to pick me up every mornings. Anyhow, I used to go to Anglin's. And I was too young to work on construction, but they put me on anyhow. And I remember one guy coming up to me, he says, "The only reason you're working here," he says, "on construction, is because of your father knows the boss." And I said, "Yeah, don't forget it." And he went, ooh. Anyhow, Mr. Cornwall, he used to do work. It was just gorgeous work. He was an artist. But the story with Mr. Cornwall is that he'd work when he'd want to work. And I must tell you about that. Anyhow, we did beautiful work. I remember one time we did, and all the old homes in Kingston, a lot of beautiful homes. I think the Queen's students who moved in. But anyhow, we won't talk about what they did to the homes. But beautiful, beautiful homes. And they were older ladies. I say older ladies. And
by old money.
And a lot of old money.
Old money, that's old money.
And they used to hire Mr. Cornwall, and we'd come in, we'd work a month, it'd be full of, it'd be paper, wallpaper after wallpaper. They paint it now, they don't. And so they took it off, and there was my signature, 1952. I would just come home, I think it was my first year with the Barry Flyers. And
you were practicing your autograph.
I was practicing my
autograph. When you got famous.
Well, I don't know if I was famous or not. So anyhow, I must go on telling. This is a good story. So then my dad come home, and Mr. Cornwall and I, you know, we work when we want to work. And we used to make a lot of money.
Yeah, you said you made good money back then.
We made a ton of money. These ladies didn't mind paying, and he used to pay me pretty good. I was making a lot of dough. I mean, I was, for you know, I'm $40 a week. That was a lot of money. Anyhow, so I can remember this as day, and Dad come home. He worked Saturday mornings, and I was sleeping in. I didn't work. And he said, "Don't go." And I remember he said, "Don't go to work today." And Ma says, "No." He said, "Why?" She says, "I don't know. Something about Mr. Cornwall thought it was going to rain. It was sunny outside." So he called me, and then he called me that afternoon, and he says, "I don't think that's a good idea working with Mr. Cornwall." He says, "You know, I got a good job for you, and I working on the railroad." Well, I'm working on the railroad, and what am I going to do? My dad tells me, I said, Dad, I said, "I make good money." And he said, "Well, it doesn't matter." I worked on a suction gang. I mean, No tougher job in the world than was the section.
So the people of the section gang, it was pretty close to the chain gangs down in Louisiana.
Chain gang, I would love to work on a chain gang. The only time we had got any rest is when the train went by. You could hear a whistle coming. Boy, and we had to stop because we had to get off the tracks. Unbelievable.
So you were fixing the railroad tracks. Or laying the railroad.
The hardest job was they had a fork, and we had to do the stones along the side, and they were tough to do. And I could not get the, and we had a big bar, great big bar. When I started, I had no hair in my chest. Honest to God, I know hair in the chest doesn't mean anything today. But when I worked on, and these guys, they weren't really muscular, but they knew how to do it, eh? And they come down from the tops and top of Kingston, way in the, and they come down and work on the section gang. Unbelievable. And I remember one guy said to me, and I was in pretty good shape. I was going away to play hockey. I thought I was in pretty good shape running. He says, I can run. And he smoked and he drank and there was tobacco running down. And I said, he says, I could outrun you, you young punk. And I said, yeah. And he said, yeah. So he ran me into the ground. My lungs were bursting. He didn't like me. Oh, I'm into the story.
I remember you were telling me, you said that, I said, what were those guys like? And you said, remember the two guys from Deliverance?
Yeah.
He says, that's what they were like.
I don't know if you saw the movie Deliverance. They got two guys that killed the guy. They killed him with an arrow. Anyhow, so now this guy, for some reason, he didn't like me. I don't know why he didn't. I guess I wasn't pulling my weight. I was doing my best, and I'll never forget this. Funny, and now I'm into it. I went to pull a tie from underneath. They'd raise it, then if the tie wasn't any good, they'd pull a tie out. And I could not. You had to have a knack to do it, eh? And I couldn't do it. I did. It was a small pick. It wasn't a big pick. It was a small pick. So I went to pull it out, and I couldn't do it. And he says, "Get out of the way." He says, "Send a boy to do a man's job." Well, I just about had it with this guy. He embarrassed me, and I said, "Say another word, and I'll put this pick right through your head." Now, all the guys, you'd think they'd, a young kid, and they gathered around to see if I'd really would put the pick through a guy's head. Honestly.
Didn't break it up.
They just stood there hoping I would. Hoping I would put his pick through his head and see if I would. And I never forgot the guy's name, Abe Jelly. He was the foreman, eh? He saw something, going. He was down at the end. All right. And I wonder if I ever would have put the pick through his head. So I never forget that Ma, and I'm getting carried away here, but Ma was with my Uncle Bill, and she saw them working. She was at a railroad stop, and Uncle Bill said, "That's what Donald does. My boy does that work. That she works." That was the last. So I only had about 2 weeks to go. So I said to Dad, "I'm going to quit. I'm 2 weeks to go." For school and for the hockey. So he never let me forget it. Like he never is, there you're working on the railroad. The point was, so I'm leaving, and here's this guy. I can still see him now, a great big tall guy, and he had tobacco running down the side of his face, and he smoked a lot. And at 4:30, and I thought, and here he is standing there.
This is your last shift.
It's my last. They didn't say goodbye or anything. They were glad to get rid of me. And I had my brother's bike, Richard's bike. It was too small. And I said, this guy's waiting to beat me up. And I thought, well, and he was, and I'll never forget, he had his leg kind of bent and he was smoking a cigarette. And I thought, well, if he's going to do it, I'm going to get a good shot at him anyhow. And I put the bike down and I waited, and he just nodded at me and didn't beat me up. I was so happy. I was so tired going home. Honest to God, this is the truth. You work hard. My feet were kind of big, and my brother's bike was kind of small. I went to turn right, and it hit me, and I fell down. I was so tired, I didn't get up. I just laid there, and a guy thought I was hurt. And he came and said, "You all right, son?" Anyhow, so what's the point? No, oh, yeah, it was 1952. Mr. Cornwall and I... I remember writing on the wall, but I didn't.
It was on King Street too. That's.
Yeah, I think it was right across from the St. Mary's Church.
Right, beautiful homes there.
Oh, they're beautiful homes.
But it's funny though to see how your signature has changed over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you practice your signature.
Well, I thought, I bought a book on calligraphy. How do you say it?
Calligraphy.
Calligraphy. And it was so good at one time when I used to send out prints. You know, I should send out Christmas cards again. I got lots of time to do it. That Bob Cole used to put them on his mantle. You know, they look so good.
That's a lost art now. Like handwriting. Like yours was. Like when you, because you got a fountain pen, right?
I had a nice pen.
It really was, we got a lot of compliments. Boy, your dad's penmanship is impeccable.
Well, a real letter isn't, but when I used to do the envelope, when I used to send out my...
They knew they were getting it from somebody.
They knew it was big and ugly, I guess.
And, but you've done stuff like that. I remember the one time you told me I still kind of remember you going to Dale Carnegie.
You know what's funny? I'll tell you what happened there.
So just people that know, Dale Carnegie's like a public speaking, like learning how
It's public. It's how to get along with people and how to public speak. And
So the public speaking did okay, how to get along with people.
No, let me tell you what happened.
Who recommended it?
Bob Clark. No, the eight owners, I was a hockey player. And I jumped it from being a hockey player to a coach and general manager. And his philosophy was, he had a group that if you were a worker and you got made a boss, it showed you how to, talk to people and...
Motivate.
What?
And motivate players.
Yeah, motivate or whatever. And I didn't need it. I mean, I didn't think I needed it. And so they paid for it. And I said, I'll go next year.
Yeah, because just jump in. You look at it now. It is expensive.
Well, I think it was 500. I think it was 500-700 or something. Anyhow, so I said I don't need it, and they said they already paid for it, so I didn't go the first year. Then I didn't go the second year when I was in Rochester, New York, as general manager coach, and Bob Clark is done. We paid for this thing. At least go and say you don't want to go anymore. So I said, it was out by the airport. I'll never forget it. So I went. And I thought, this is pretty good. And we did silly things, silly, silly, silly things. We'd stand in a circle, and they'd say, tell a story. And one person, an ape was flying through the trees, and all of a sudden, he'd point to you, and you had to pick it up. You had to pick the story up. And you had a newspaper. It was ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous. Then I started to notice the second one. I think I'll go to the second one. And I noticed this old lady. She was crying. The guy, it was two failed people up above, but had graduated. We've given this lady heck. You get up there and speak in front of three people. And, she was crying. She couldn't. And I started to see she was getting better. I said, hey, I think I'll stay in this thing. And I stayed right to the very end. And I saw people that couldn't speak in front of anybody, and get up, and they really helped me, because I remember the very first time I get up in front of people, I blanked. I just absolutely couldn't. I looked out and I blanked, and Dale Carnegie, is he still going?
Yeah, you can still take the courses. They say they're very expensive now.
Tell the story at the end about the pen. You had to get up. Everyone had to get up and sort of tell.
Oh, I did. Well, you want me to tell that story?
Yeah, that is a funny story because no one would believe it.
Well, I never.
You were graduating.
Every week they'd give a little pen if you were good at the story. And I didn't get a pen.
You didn't get a pen?
I didn't get a pen till I got till the last one. I thought we'd better give this guy a pen. But you had to get up and do a speech, and a good speech, because if you
about
got a
anything,
pen, about anything,
yeah.
So I get up, these two people at Pill, and I said, "You made this woman cry," and I give them a hard time, and they started to get tears in her eyes, and they thought I was serious. Anyhow, that's got a pen. So the story is, I got a pen, and I'll tell you, Dale Carnegie, it laughs.
Because they say the number one fear of people is speaking in front of people.
Oh, that's right, too.
They say that's the number one fear, because that's a Seinfeld joke. The first thing is speaking in front of people. The second most feared thing is death. So Seinfeld's joke was, you'd rather be in the coffin than give the eulogy.
I don't know about that, though, but I remember the very first time I got up to speak, I just blanked. I mean, I looked out and all these people and I got better, and that was pretty good at the end.
Yeah, because there was a time that you crisscrossed Canada doing banquets.
I did one time for the Green Cross fertilizer. I know people are listening. And we went across right from Vancouver, straight across the fields and whatever they call it.
Prairies.
And I did so many. I was having lunch one time. The guy says, well, we're having something over at the church. Why don't you come over and speak there? I was a jack of all trades. So I went over. I remember I woke up one time. I didn't know where I was. I had to look at the matches they smoked back in those days. I didn't know where I was. I did so many. And I was so tired. I really was. So anyhow, that's how I got the name. I put the name on there. And who would ever know? How many years? 52?
What's that, 70 years ago?
70 years ago. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Well, whoever sent it to John Price sent it to me. And if
there's probably other houses in Kingston that have wallpaper with your name behind it.
And you know, you showed me a picture of it. It looked like a Sharpie.
Yeah, it's amazing how it didn't fade.
You'd think it would.
It didn't fade. Well, it wasn't a Sharpie. It didn't have Sharpies back then.
Didn't yet have Sharpie. I have more Sharpies than anybody in the world. it does look like a Sharpie. I wonder what I did with.
So, Dad, I think the other big thing that happened in the NHL this week, that the Seattle Kraken are officially part of
what is it? What are they calling?
Krakens.
Krakens, the big monster, eh?
Yep. And
used to be Totems. It was Totems.
Yeah, because you played, you didn't play in Seattle, but you played.
Let me tell you, those people, you know, a lot of people say, Seattle, what do they know about hockey? They had the Western Hockey League, and they had the Seattle Totems. They had a real good team. They had Guy Fieler, and I mean, the goalie was Head, I think, and really a big, tough team. Boy, have they ever played hockey. They played hockey.
Yeah, what league? That was the WHL. That's the Western Hockey League.
We played for Vancouver.
Right,
Vancouver.
So it's not like people think that's junior hockey, but it was professional back then.
It was tough, boy, I'll tell you. And
who did you play for?
I played for Vancouver when the Seattle Totems. I also played for Spokane. I won't go into too long. Someday I must. But Sandy Stoneface Huckle, Billa Destroyers to Chevettes, and Connie Mad Dog Madigan, and they earned their name. So I see they've got a big S, Seattle, which is good. You know, it's for Seattle. And that was the same as Spokane used to have. Spokane, a big S. Oh, I won't say what they used to say.
You said that was one of the tougher leagues you played in.
That team was the toughest team I ever played on. I used to, in the mornings, Rose used to see me in the morning. I'd have my breakfast and I'd be nervous. The game, I was never nervous. But before every practice, I was nervous. And she said, well, you know, I have to ask the question. She says, you eat in the morning and you're more nervous to be going. I said, if you ever saw our practices, you'd understand. It was like Sandy and Bill, they were Polish, I think, or something. And we were, and Connie Patrick Madigan, and we were like the Irish against it. Oh, boy. I mean, every practice I would be so happy to get through the, and I remember, I'll tell you a story sometime about Connie Madigan. But boy, I'll tell you, boy, and one time I remember I was going to really get creamed coming along the blue line. And Sandy let me off the hook. And boy, was Connie mad. You're a disgrace to the Irish and all that stuff. And you see him laughing over in the corner. He lets you off the hook and everything like that. And I remember, boy, he could have killed me. And he let on he was going to hit me. And then he jumped. I was so embarrassed. I wish he had hit me.
You were saying that there was, you remember in Seattle, though, you went to one bar that you guys really
loved. Yeah. I forgot to tell you that story. Like I said, but people in Seattle know hockey. They're not fooling. I know some people in Vancouver say, whoever, Seattle. I still think Quebec should get franchise. They're beautiful. But anyhow, I think we played in the afternoon. I was telling you before. And an older player had a bar. And it was closed. I don't know why. It was a sunny afternoon. It must have been closed. So I remember we, three tiers, we sat on the top. And he gave us cold beer. Boy, they were cold beer. And hot popcorn with butter on it. I thought I was in heaven. So Seattle know, and Gordy Gallant will be the coach.
You think he'll be the coach?
Oh, how could he not be the coach? He's a good coach. The players like him.
Well, he was the coach, for people who don't remember, he was the original coach for Vegas, who went on their inaugural season, went to the finals. Do you think Seattle will, and they're under a lot of pressure to try to...
They will never be another team like Las Vegas, but this is going to be a pretty good team. Not like the old days where they give them guys that couldn't play. This is going to be a pretty. They're going to have a pretty good team.
Well, it's the whole thing. Like, who's the goalie going to be? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they get Freddie Anderson.
They won't get Freddie. I don't. They won't get Freddie. By the way, the Leafs. Who are they? Jack Campbell, and Freddie will be back before.
The playoffs are only. This is Sunday morning. The playoffs are only about a week away. So.
Well, they'll go with Campbell. Freddie Anderson is a great goaltender, but he hasn't played. And the other guys, he's only lost two games.
Two games, yeah.
And he looks like he's a cocky guy, but we'll talk about the playoffs. The playoffs are a whole different. The other day there, I watched Boston Bruins play 50 hits. 50 hits, and they're on the road, I think. 50 hits. I mean, I see clubs that are good, but they'll never go anywhere in the playoffs. They get about 15, 20, 20 hits. They had 50 hits at Boston Bruins. That's why one of the reasons, it's a funny thing. You go to a club that doesn't hit, you stop hitting. And you go to a club that does, everybody hits, then you start hitting. Because you don't want to be, unless you get 40 or 50 goals. But it's the funniest thing. And we were talking about Simmons.
Simmons, that was the big kerfuffle. That with Simmons hit that Lars Eller's got into a fight because Eller's hit Zach Hyman and kind of semi-stuck his knee out.
Well, I don't think there's no way Eller meant to hurt him. But it was a bang-bang play, and he kind of, if I was on the other club, he kind of, but I don't think he meant to hurt him. Lars Eller wouldn't hurt him. He wouldn't hurt him. I know a lot of people in Vancouver are upset about this, but you have to answer the bell. And Lars Eller, he did on, he grabbed the hold, he did his best. He never had a fight before in his life.
No, he's fighting a tough guy.
You're not going to win, you're not going to win. And I think Simmons kind of let up a little bit, cut him a little bit, but not too much. But you have to answer the bell. Now, I question Vancouver. You know, Simmons is on the ice. You know he's looking for trouble. And that's what they got him for. And you think if Vancouver would have had somebody, to help him. But I was looking at Vancouver. Who the heck? Who are they going to put on with Simmons? But Simmons, he didn't really, he got him down, but he let him, when he got him down, he didn't hit him. But the thing, it's the way of the world in hockey. It's also the way of the world in baseball. Now, I was watching the game the other night, and a ball got away from him, and he hit the guy in the head. He didn't mean to. Didn't matter. I knew one of the other guys on the team that was getting hit. If you hit my guy, I got to hit your guy. Well, baseball is the same way. Tell us about that pitcher you're telling me about.
Yeah, so the Yankees, it was CC Sabathia, and he was, I think it was it was towards the end of his career. I think that might have been his last game, or last game of the season. And he was going to, he had a bonus that if he pitched X amount of innings, he got a $500,000 bonus. And he needed one more inning to get the bonus.
One inning.
He needed one more inning to get the bonus. I think he had to pitch like 50 innings or something like that. And he was on his 49th. And the inning before he goes out, I think they were playing the Red Sox. The Red Sox pitcher hit the Yankee guy.
On purpose.
So Sebastian went out, and, you know, they were warned, don't be doing this. And the first pitch hit a guy, got thrown out of the game. That was it. He lost his $500,000 bonus. And they said to him, like, that was it. You lost your bonus. And he says, I don't care. You hit my guy, I'm hitting you. I don't care how much money's on the line.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the way the world is. A lot of people don't like it because they've never, ever been involved. And
well, as you talk about all the time, it's culture. And a lot of people that know sports, but they don't know the culture of the sports.
Well, anyhow. Yeah, I was thinking of you, Cindy, and the Kentucky Derby when Median Spirit, and he never ever had a horse in front of him, and I know you had a horse when you used it. I said they were wetting him down after with the hose and all that stuff. And I said that's what Cindy used to do.
You had a
horse do the exact opposite.
Well, it's all, I always say it's all in the training of the horse. And you had big money on a horse that was supposed to be winning, and the trainer didn't train it right, and that it always held it back to get the
odds. Hold on. No, wait a minute. The trainer did what the owner told him to do, or?
No, not really.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, all right.
Not really.
Well, anyhow.
Anyway, the horse, they didn't train the horse right. I mean, the horse was going to win a certain race, but they had been holding it back to get the odds up. And sure enough, when
Does that happen to that horse racing?
Dad, you're not that naive.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it does. And the horse wasn't trained properly. And when they let the horse, it was going to win because, you know, it wasn't used to other horses. It wasn't used. It was always used to being behind other horses. So that was the training it the wrong way.
That was it.
It was the opposite of this horse.
Well, that's
the
Median Spirit.
He never, yeah, they said he was never passed by another horse.
And he would never let another horse
pass. And now that's good training.
Yeah, and
I was watching the window, Cindy. There was a horse. I remember it was a gray horse.
And I love gray horses because that way you can watch them specifically.
Yeah. And he was kind of out in front. And then he sank like a stone. So would that be like the jockey just saying, well, we're not going to win this, I'm not going to run him and pulling him back? Or,
well, he probably just ran out of steam. And that, again, that's the training or the jockey. You know, you got to time it well that your horse is going to have the strength to get through the whole race. And if it, you know, might have been hurt, but I doubt it. It probably just burned itself out.
I want to end on this one, that the lady that owned him originally, let him go for $1,000, and this guy, the owner that owns him now, paid $35,000, which is nothing to those guys. I often think of the husband.
She got it in a divorce settlement. She got
the horse.
And she just let it go for $1,000. And I was keeping that horse. That was my favorite horse. The horse made $2 million at Kentucky Derby. It won $2 million. And can you imagine her husband that she let it go for $1,000? I was grooming that horse. Anyhow, Median Spirit. Is that the name of it?
That's it, yep.
That's won the Kentucky Derby, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the races. And someday I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you one story about, and then I have to go. I keep getting carried away. I remember the Kentucky Derby was coming up, and Jimmy Pappin, who played for us, he played for the Leafs too, got the winning goal, by the way, for the Stanley Cup. But anyhow, he go like to one guy, Dick Gamble. He'd be a $25,000 claimer. And, you know, he went around. So I said to him, you had everybody on the club. You didn't have me. He says, Grapes, you know that horse that drags a gray gate? That's you.